My fellow Americans, I'm pleased to tell you today that I've signed legislation that will outlaw Russia forever. We begin bombing in 5 minutes.
It is essential that our team learns to work with our new recruit, not against him.
I'm a geek, walking down the street.
Check the computer.
The mainframe computer.
I access the mainframe.
At the end of this day, one shall stand, one shall fall.
Time to find out.
Welcome to Basically a Geek Show. Here are your hosts, Mike and Jack.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 32 of Basically a Geek Show, the eighth wonder of the world. With you, as always, I'm Mike and Jack, and here's Jack.
We are your first, last, and only line of defense against the idiocy of the internet. Or something like that. I think that's a much better tagline.
Is it? Well, I want to talk about idiocy. Let's, you know.
Oh, we've got a lot of it.
Let's start right off the bat. Was a rumor going around. Nothing's been confirmed yet, you know, so keep that in mind. But there's a rumor that they're going to be adding another Star Wars spinoff to the series of Star Wars spinoffs that we talked about a few shows back. You know, these origin stories that they don't want to call prequels because Star Wars prequel is kind of not a good term right now.
The P word, and not the one you normally think.
Yeah. Well, you know, so we talked that they were considering that they're doing a Han Solo, I think a Yoda, and then a Boba Fett prequel, like just those three origin stories. And apparently the rumor is that they're going to add another one to that list, an Obi-Wan Kenobi spinoff. And,
yeah.
So, you know, they're going to be doing this. And again, this is all very tenuous. Ewan McGregor has said – Ewan McGregor has, like, hinted that he's going to appear in a flashback scene as younger Obi-Wan in episode 7, which makes sense, honestly, because, oh, my God, I can't believe I forgot the guy who played Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Alec Guinness.
Alec Guinness. I can't believe I forgot Alec Guinness. God damn it. But, yeah, Alec Guinness.
His last name is Beer.
Alec Guinness, he's dead, though, right?
Yes, he is dead. And I was actually about to say,
yeah.
So does this mean we're going to have zombie Alec Guinness playing? Emote more.
But, you know, that's my point, is that if you want to have Obi-Wan Kenobi appear in any capacity in the new main trilogy, so that's episode 7, 8, 9, then you'd have to do a flashback with Ewan McGregor because Alec Guinness, you know, is unfortunately unavailable. He has a case of death, and he's probably not going to recover from that anytime soon. So with that kind of in mind, like, I don't have a problem with Ewan McGregor showing up in the new main trilogy in, like, a flashback scene, or even if they want to, you know, make him look all old and try to pass him off as Alec Guinness. Like, I don't care about that so much. Because, you know, Obi-Wan Kenobi was one of the least offensive parts of the prequel trilogy, and I maintain that it probably would have been a better film series if they had just used him as the main character.
It most likely would have been. But my thing about this isn't whether or not I think it'll be good, mm-hmm. or what I think of the character, really, in this particular case. Mm-hmm. It's a matter of – it kind of goes back to what we've said about Han Solo and Boba Fett. Is this really necessary? Yoda. Okay, I can totally see – I mean, the fucker's 900 goddamn years old. I can totally see, you know, where an origin story may be interesting. You know, what happened in those, you know, 900 years.
You know, exactly. And, you know, just with Yoda being 900 years old, I mean, theoretically, Yoda almost goes back to the birth of the Galactic Republic. So you can use a Yoda origin story movie to really explore, like, the Star Wars universe's, like, ancient history.
Right. And with this, though, it's like, okay, you got Han Solo, you got Boba Fett, now Obi-Wan Kenobi. all of their quote-unquote origins or beginnings or whatever, they're very adequately explained, at least satisfactorily explained, in the movies. Like Han Solo. Okay, well, he's a smuggler dude, and his origins are pretty much being a smuggler dude.
He worked for Jabba the Hutt, got into some shit, and then kind of stumbled into the Rebel Alliance.
Yeah, Boba Fett, clone dude. I mean, his origin was very well covered in the prequels.
In a shitty prequel.
Well, yeah, right. But still, it was covered, and, you know, I don't see the point to any of that. Obi-Wan Kenobi. Again, he was Qui-Gon's...
Padawan.
Padawan, whatever.
That's one of those words George Lucas likes to just make up.
Yeah, yeah. You know, he was, you know, his student, and he did his thing, and that's how he got his start.
And he killed Darth Maul.
Right, and, you know, Obi-Wan was documented as being pretty young in the prequels, so what is this, what can this possibly really cover?
I mean,
baby Obi-Wan levitating a spoon?
I mean, there are two.
You've got to get him tested for the midichlorians and the gayness, you know?
I think there are two, avenues that you could go down of an origin story. And this is even assuming this is an origin story. Like, we don't know. They just say Obi-Wan Kenobi spinoff. So,
well, yeah. So it could cover the shit between the first trilogy and the second.
But you see, here's the thing. If they do that, there's nothing to tell. Okay, Obi-Wan, at the end of episode 3...
Well, they could tell about how the fuck he forgot, you know...
Everything?
Yeah.
Well, I just assumed that was heatstroke. Okay, he's old and he's living on the desert planet with, like, three sons. Or two sons, okay? You know, the dude probably had heatstroke. And then just forgot about, like, half the shit that he did over the past 20 years. But, I mean, that's the thing. If this is going to try to be, like, Obi-Wan's story between episode 3 and 4, like... Yeah, there's like 20 years, 16 years actually, I think, because Luke's supposed to be 16 in the first, in episode 4, so yeah, it would be 16 years. In the 16 years between those two, I mean...
It's like, there's a reason that there's a time gap between those trilogies.
There's nothing happened.
Right, like, exactly.
Well,
I mean,
stuff happened, but not involving Obi-Wan.
Well, stuff happened, but I mean, how the Empire's rise came about. We know how its fall came about. Mm-hmm. Everything in the middle, at least as it pertains to Obi-Wan, is him going to be out in the middle of buttfuck Nevada somewhere, probably.
It's basically just Obi-Wan in the desert, like living as a hermit in the desert.
And he's just going to be like, well, it's fucking hot out here. Kind of dry too. It kind of gets in your sinuses a bit. My mouth feels dusty.
Those goddamn sand people won't get off my lawn.
Yeah. I mean, like, I guess maybe you could. Well, no, because he wasn't even around for that. Evidently,
what?
I was gonna say you could do the formation of the Rebel Alliance.
No. Here's the thing about that is that he's not really around for the formation of the Rebel Alliance. Like Obi-Wan, like the Rebel Alliance knew he was out there, right? And like, but as far as I know, and perhaps someone who's more familiar with the extended universe can correct me on this, but as far as I know, Obi-Wan had no real direct contact with the formation of the Rebel Alliance. The Rebel Alliance knew he was out there.
No, because he was too busy watching tumbleweeds blow by while living in the taint of the galaxy.
Exactly. But, like, you know, they knew he was out there. And then when Leia tries to contact him in episode 4, that was really the first time that, like, the Rebel Alliance reached out. Because they knew he'd be sympathetic. And I'm sure in some way Obi-Wan was probably sort of someone that the Rebel Alliance held up as a sort of example. But, yeah, again, as far as I know, Obi-Wan Kenobi was on Tatooine for those 16 years and never, you know, played a direct role in the foundation of the Rebel Alliance.
Right.
And, so, I'm sorry, go on.
I was going to say, why can't we do... one of these origin stories about a character that would be around. Like, okay, Akbar. Well, let's have fucking Akbar. You know, him forming the alliance and everything. It's a trap. You know, at least it'd be funny. Or Princess Leia, even. You know, she was evidently involved in the Rebel Alliance shenanigans and whatnot. Hence her, you know, hologram recording or whatnot. At the
You're
beginning
our only hope, Obi-Wan.
Right. Yeah. You know, so she was there. Some shit went down. How did it go down? How was it planned? Was this the first Rebel Alliance mission? Was this like the first thing that they did? Or had they been around for a few years? You know, there's nothing explaining that. Yet, you know, we get, you know, movies about these other guys who really, there's not much to tell in most cases. Mm-hmm. And maybe with Yoda, we might find out about, well, no, because he was living out in fucking swamp gas Georgia.
Yeah, no. You know, Yoda. Yeah, Yoda's potential isn't an origin story. Trying to bridge the gap between episode 3, because Yoda doesn't appear in episode 4, so the gap between episode 3 and 5 is basically just Yoda on the swamp planet, like, I don't know, being a Murloc.
Smells like farts, it does. Live here I shall. You know, what the fuck? So there's not too much in that time period for Yoda either. So there's one – basically, I guess my main point here is that there actually is one aspect of the events that happens in the movies that they don't really expound much upon, that they could, yet they're going in – they're relying so much on, like, the – how famous the characters are that they're not, you know, taking the chance to go with some of the lesser known characters or, you know, smaller parts in the movies at least, and showing what they did that later on had larger impacts in the series.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the other option is to explore Obi-Wan Kenobi's life before the events of episode 1. So you could potentially talk about his role as a kid kind of being inducted into the Jedi Order. Of course, then you're probably not going to use Ewan McGregor because, you know, he's quite a bit old for that sort of role. But
that just doesn't sound very interesting either.
Well, we don't – I mean, there is a lot there's a lot of gray area we can work with. We really don't know much about Obi-Wan Kenobi's family, you know, pre-Jedi Order. We know he's got a brother, he's got a mother, and he's got a father. And we know that – yeah, I'm not sure how you could really do that because – okay. Anakin's like 8 in Phantom Menace.
Yeah.
And Obi-Wan Kenobi takes him to try to get him inducted into the Jedi Order, and Yoda's like, he's too old. So 8 is apparently, like, too old. Like, you're already in the Jedi Order when you're 8, if you're a Jedi. So you'd really, he'd be really young when he was inducted into the Jedi Order. And so I guess you could do stuff where maybe Qui-Gon Jinn is training, like, a young Obi-Wan Kenobi, like, their adventures when Obi-Wan Kenobi was, like, a kid. But, you know, Phantom Menace kind of proved that people don't really want to see, you know, little kid Jedis, because that was stupid. But on the plus side to that story, though, you could probably get Liam Neeson, because it's not like he's got anything better going on at the moment.
Yeah, because fuck it, why not?
Well, you know, the CW turned him down, so.
Yeah.
He's probably got a pretty clear schedule.
Though, did we actually mention that on the last episode?
We did, yes, we did.
Okay.
Yeah, when they announced that Ra's al Ghul is going to be the villain in Arrow Season 3, Liam Neeson. Yeah, I'm pretty sure we did cover it, but on the off chance that I'm remembering it wrong, Liam Neeson offers to play Ra's al Ghul in Season 3 of Arrow. Arrow says, thanks, but no thanks. Liam Neeson gets turned down by the CW.
Yeah. I mean, at that point, yeah, anyways, yeah. There's left to do.
So he's probably got a free schedule. So if they wanted to do that, they could probably get Liam Neeson to play Qui-Gon again.
Well, I wonder if he's, like, phoning Disney. Hey, guys. I'm open. Yes, Liam, we know. You told us this not even 2 hours ago. Okay. I just heard my phone ring. I thought it might have been you guys.
So, you know, that's, you know, that's how you'd have to do it. I mean, on the drawback, the drawback to that is that you'd essentially have, like, Qui-Gon training, like, a Obi-Wan as a kid. And again, that's really something that didn't really work in the prequels when they tried to do Anakin as a kid in Phantom Menace. So, you know, that might not be something they want to do. And other than that, again, the only real other option is to document Obi-Wan's years as he kind of slips into dementia in the desert.
It's almost like they're trying to turn Star Wars kind of, at least in the way that the movies are designed, into the next Marvel universe.
Well, no, that's exactly what they're trying to. That's exactly what they're trying to do. They want a steady stream of Star Wars movies. Like, you're gonna have, like, the main series, which is gonna be Episode 7, Episode 8, Episode 9, but then they're going to stagger those releases with the Han Solo movie, with the Yoda movie, with the Boba Fett movie, so that every year, you know, you're not really gonna go a year without a Star Wars movie in theaters.
I don't know. I mean, I don't think it's going to be very successful to reverse engineer that.
Yeah.
I mean, it worked for the Marvel movies because these were guys that really hadn't had big screen adaptations done well or done at all in a lot of cases. And so, I mean, that was a good thing to do, to reintroduce these characters and to, you know, show what they do, who they are. This is Star Wars, though.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all of this is already in place. We already have a good feel for these characters, and most of this shit's already been explained.
Mm-hmm.
It
does kind of go back to that, because one of the criticisms of the prequel trilogy was, and to be fair, I never really kind of bought into this because it was all incredibly reactionary. When the prequels were first announced, people were all really excited about them. It was this sort of attitude only really came about after they were exposed as crap. People were like, was this a story that needed to be told? Because theoretically, you didn't need these movies because the first trilogy explained in detail what happened to, what the prequel trilogy story was. Obi-Wan says, you know, Darth Vader was your father. He was seduced by the dark side of the Force, and then he became a jerk and killed us all. You get Darth Vader's backstory in full in the prequel trilogy. I mean, in the original trilogy. So, like, people, after the prequels came out and were, you know, horrible, people were saying, oh, well, you know, this wasn't a story that had to be told. And I disagree with that to an extent, because I don't think anyone would be saying that if the story was told well.
Right. The question here is, you know, what is the story? Now, in this case, you're talking about the origin of arguably the arch villain of the second trilogy. I mean, you could make an argument that the Emperor was, but he didn't have all that much screen time. And then he just gets tossed off
a
fucking. Well, yeah, but I mean, then he still got fucking tossed down this fucking electro pit, what the fuck ever, like a little bitch.
Mm-hmm.
And that was that, you know. But Vader, he was very present. He was very, you know.
Vader was the iconic villain of that, that series, yes.
So, yeah, exploring his origins via film does make sense. But in these. And especially since none of that had actually really been shown. It had been told but not shown. Now, we're talking in these cases, especially in, like, Boba Fett. His origin was pretty much shown.
I think what they're talking about, like, a Boba Fett. I mean, I think when they talk about a Boba Fett origin story, they're going to try to explain, like, what was he doing before we see him in Episode 5, Empire Strikes Back. Like, what was he doing? Like, I guess the idea is that because he's a bounty hunter, you could probably make a movie about all, like, the cool bounty hunter space adventures that he had.
But if he was doing anything all that interesting, wouldn't it have been mentioned? Like Darth Vader, what he did was worth knowing. So they told that, and then later on they showed that in the first trilogy, or the second, whatever, the prequels. They showed it there. And it was mentioned. Now, Boba Fett, they didn't really mention what he did, except that he was a bounty hunter. And then later on in the prequels, they showed his bare bones origin of how he came, how he was quote unquote born. And then there you go. Okay. Well, that's how he got his start. He's a bounty hunter. Okay. Of course, I never really got the huge fan affinity for Boba Fett anyways.
He has he's
the most retarded fucking thing I ever heard, but.
He's got a cool look to him. Like, so
he does? I never noticed.
Like, people tend to like the way his armor looks, and he was kind of quiet. So he kind of had that sort of, like, quiet, mysterious, badass vibe. But if you actually look at Boba Fett's actions in the original trilogy, he's not really worthy of the praise he gets. I mean, he gets killed. Boba Fett is killed by a blind Han Solo in Return of the Jedi.
Wah, wah, wah.
You know, blind Han Solo takes him out. By accident. Han Solo, like, stumbles back and then knocks Boba Fett into the sand vagina.
What a way to go.
So... yeah, but, you know, Boba Fett's popular for reasons, so I guess they figure that they can have, like, cool space pirate adventures or something.
I suppose. But, yeah, I mean, I guess long and short of it is, oh my God, Disney's putting its penis in the Star Wars.
I really hope that this Obi-Wan Kenobi movie is just 2 hours of, like, Ewan McGregor sitting in the desert being like, it's hot today. Just like
sure
yesterday.
Is hot, I tell you what. Them damn sand people would have been fucking off in my tool shed.
And again, what a shitty job hiding from the Empire, Obi-Wan. You use your last name in your you use your actual last name in your alias.
I am Ben Kenobi.
And you live down the street from Vader's relatives. Really? Really?
Witness protection fail.
I don't know what's sadder, the fact that he thought it would work or the fact that it did work.
I would say the latter. Like, I mean, because the first just relies on one person being a bit of an idiot.
Mm-hmm.
The second one involves, like, the entire intelligence gathering apparatus of the Empire being full of people with the IQ of a dust bunny.
Yeah.
And... we're talking failure at an institutional level at that point.
Like, nobody in the Empire, like, Googled Kenobi Skywalker Tatooine.
It's kind of like the U.S. hunting down Bin Laden. Well, we finally got the idea to look at his fucking house and check there.
Has anyone checked his house? Oh.
It's just crazy enough to work. BRB, pizza.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's history. So, I mean, you know...
That was great, though. That fake Bin Laden Twitter handle for BRB Pizza.
Yeah. That is great. Oh God.
But
yeah, so that's pretty much a short and the long of that, I guess.
Yeah, that's Star Wars. Yeah, like I said, I hope we just get Ewan McGregor like sitting in the desert for 2 hours, like bitching about like it's a dry heat.
Yeah, it's a dry heat.
So, okay, so we're going to jump right in to Venom.
Yeah.
Now, we talked a bit about this last week, and we actually got some listener feedback on it about how, you know, they were more or less kind of got what we were saying when we said that Sony is trying to sort of squeeze a multi-character franchise, like multi-character universe out of one franchise, that being Spider-Man. And how, you know, this was kind of a shaky proposition. And now, you know, we're kind of getting news about Venom, the Venom movie.
Which, if there is, I mean, okay, this is one that could probably work. I mean, Venom had his own comic.
Venom had his own comic, yeah, but at the same time, that a lot of people argue that this was a case of overexposure in the comic book level. I mean, at the end of the day, Venom is a villain, and you can say, oh, you know, well, Venom, he kind of became an anti-hero. But, I don't know, it's kind of like when they made that Catwoman movie with Halle Berry. Like,
yeah.
At this, like I kept thinking, like, how the hell is this? How the hell is this a movie? Where's Batman?
Like, yeah, where's Batman?
I feel like Batman should be here. And so I have a feeling I'm going to go through all of this, and I'm going to watch this. I'm like, you know, like, does Venom – can you really do a Venom movie without Spider-Man? And Andrew Garfield has been very coy about the role that he's going to play in a lot of these spin-off Spider-Man movies. You know, we might get Spider-Man in it, but so far everything has been about Venom.
Wonder if Liam Neeson's called them. I could play Venom. You're too old. I can look young. Shut up, Liam. Stop. Lose our number.
But you know, as one of our listeners put it, brought this to light, from the original Spider-Man movie, 2002 onward, every single Spider-Man movie has made less than its predecessor.
Which, when adjusted for inflation, is pretty sad.
Spider-Man, you know, original Spider-Man, you know, Spider-Man 2 made less than Spider-Man 1. Spider-Man 3 made less than Spider-Man 2. Amazing Spider-Man made less than Spider-Man 3. Amazing Spider-Man 2 made less than Amazing Spider-Man. So, you know, there's the argument to be made that this franchise, you know, it hasn't been a quick death, but that it is on sort of, you know, the decline. And if fans, if there is this decreasing level of interest in Spider-Man, how much of an interest is there going to be in his supporting cast, which is essentially what the villains are?
Okay, I'll play a little bit of devil's advocate here. And maybe it's just that it is overexposure of Spider-Man. Maybe it's because that character, people just don't like him anymore. Or it like him less.
I could buy that. The reason I stopped reading Spider-Man comics is he was a whiny bitch who constantly complained about, well, everything.
These problems matter. Yeah, pretty much. Mm-hmm. I mean, the whole teen angsty thing. Maybe it's just, well, no, even when I was a teenager, I thought that shit was stupid. So, you know, but maybe some, especially, like, I get it, and from a certain aspect, this whole make a movie surrounding a villain or an anti-hero, it's different enough to where it might work, depending on how well they do it. If it's going to work, it's going to work with Venom.
Mm-hmm.
If Venom flops, then they just need to fucking give it up and let Marvel have the rights back. I mean, they won't, of course, as long as they can milk a few bucks out of it. But I'm just saying, for the good of all of us, that's what should be done. But with Venom, I mean, there's enough there that's interesting to where it could be good if they do it right. If it meets the expectations or maybe even surpasses them. You know, Godzilla has kind of restored my faith that things that you wouldn't think should work out can. So maybe this can be one of those where everyone's like, what?
Mm-hmm.
And it ends up, you know, being a hit because it is different. It's, you know, a superhero movie, comic book movie that's following the villain instead of the hero. It won't have any of Spider-Man's whiny teen angsty bullshit to weigh it down, and they can just maybe make it kind of badass.
What, you didn't like Amazing Spider-Man 2 being, you know, half about Peter Parker's failing high school relationship?
Nah, not really.
I'm sad. I'm going to go home and listen to my shitty iTunes play track playlist.
Yeah, plugs. But yeah, no. And that's always been my thing with the Spider. On one hand, I like the Spider-Man character because of the wisecracks and everything like that. I do dig that.
Yeah, but Tony Stark can give you that plus alcohol.
Right, exactly. You know. Or, I mean, if we could just get a fucking Deadpool movie.
I mean, yeah, with Deadpool, I mean, he's owned by Fox. So if he was, you know, he'd be in that Fantastic Four X-Men universe that Fox has got going on.
Yeah, which, I mean, that would, oh my God, Deadpool and the Fantastic Four. Deadpool sneaking onto the flight with fucking Reed Richards. Hilarity would ensue and probably end with Reed Richards' suicide, and the world would be a better place.
Reed Richards is a jackass because, you know, I know it's been retconned a bunch of times, but in the original comic books, Reed Richards and Ben, I can't remember the thing's last name. Ben, it's G. It's Ben something. Ben G something. Anyway, Ben and Reed are the only two who really have any business being on that launch. Ben being a pilot and Reed being a scientist. Sue Storm is just, is just Reed Richards' a girlfriend. And Johnny is her 16-year-old brother. So Reed Richards is just like, you know, yeah, I just, like, brought my girlfriend and her brother on board the top-secret NASA flight. Oh, and then Ben flew us through, like, space herpes, and now we have superpowers.
But, yeah, they actually, like, a couple months ago, there was test footage released or leaked or whatever, like 3 minutes worth of Ryan Reynolds playing Deadpool. I haven't seen it, but I heard it was pretty damn good for footage.
Ryan Reynolds being kind of a snarky jackass is perfect. That's why so many people were excited for Wolverine Origins, because they're like, oh, they're going to get Ryan Reynolds to play Deadpool? Like, that's perfect casting. And then, that whole movie was a clusterfuck of failure.
Yeah, but anyways, so, you know, I don't know. They doing this with the Venom movie, I mean, it's different enough to where it could work. It's at least, I don't see where it's pointless to give it a shot, unlike the Star Wars Origins movies that just don't really seem to have a purpose other than milking. For this one, I can see where they want to throw it against the wall and see if it'll stick. It's different enough to where it might have some merit.
Mm-hmm. I get you. I get you on that. Well, you know, again, though, that's my thing. That the Spider-Man movies have seen decreasing returns with every release since the first Spider-Man movie. So, I don't know. Like, the franchise just might not be in a healthy enough state to justify this.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. It's probably more justified to try something different than to do what they're doing and just, you know, following the flow chart of is current franchise exhausted or current franchise relevant?
Mm-hmm.
If yes, make sequel. If no, reboot.
If they rebooted Spider-Man again, that would be amazing.
It would be. But that's probably the point where they're at with, you know, like you said, each movie and the various iterations making less and less and less progressively. You know, they got to do something or else they're just going to be like, okay, well, here you go, Marvel. And they're not about to lose what could be, you know, a big fucking cash cow for them at one point was for a couple of years.
I mean, it still kind of is. Amazing Spider-Man and 2. Even as the lowest grossing Spider-Man movie, still made $700 million.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's nothing to sneeze at.
Mm-hmm.
They're still making money off of these. I think giving Venom a shot is warranted. It's certainly better than jumping straight into a Spider-Man 3 already, which, I mean, I know that movie did good. I know a lot of people, you yourself included, liked it.
What, Spider-Man 3?
No, I'm sorry. Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
I liked it. I recognize it had its flaws. The Gwen Stacy stuff got really overdone, I thought. But at the end of the day, I kind of like it despite its flaws. I really liked the Green Goblin stuff, and I wish that they would have I wish that that movie had been more about Green Goblin and less about Electro, because Electro, at the end of the day, didn't really do all that much.
No, he really didn't. I don't know. I thought that movie was just ass.
I think there's stuff in it that has potential. I would have cut Electro out entirely. I would have, you know, cut the Gwen Peter angst in half. And then I would have used that extra time to, like, build up Harry Osborn as the Green Goblin and then just made it Goblin versus Spider-Man.
That probably would have been a better movie, yes.
And that's just like my armchair directing thing. That's kind of just what I saw because, yeah, those were my two big problems. Electro kind of not doing much, but somehow still hogging the main villain role while, you know, Gwen and Peter had their, you know, angst fest. So
being a teenager's hard.
These problems matter. Yeah. So that was kind of, that was my problem, but that was sort of my problem with it. I think, but you know, honestly, that's also why I'm kind of excited to see the sequel because as flawed as Amazing Spider-Man 2 was, there was a lot I liked. I liked Dane DeHaan as Harry Osborn / the Green Goblin. I like kind of that subterfuge Black Ops crap that they're doing with Oscorp. I'm not happy that Norman Osborn is apparently in this movie universe been relegated to, like, dead.
Well, he's a head in a jar.
He is a head in a jar, yeah. And, you know, they might... They'll probably stick his head on, like, a robotic goblin body or something. But, you know, there's stuff I like about it. I like kind of the mystery. They described it very – they described Oscorp very vividly when Amazing Spider-Man 1 first came out. They described Oscorp as being sort of this Tower of Babel type place where, like, all these dark things are happening beneath the surface. And I kind of – and I like that idea. I like the I like what they've done with Oscorp in this new series. I like Dane DeHaan as Harry / the Green Goblin. And Andrew Garfield, you know, I maintain I feel that Andrew Garfield is the superior Peter Parker to what's-his-face?
Tobey Maguire.
Tobey Maguire, yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's – duh.
I mean, so all – Amazing Spider-Man 2 had a lot of missteps, yes, but I also think that there's a lot of potential here. So, you know, I'm interested to see where they go further in this, in a third Spider-Man movie. And I'm not even necessarily opposed to Venom. The idea of a Venom movie, it's just, I've never seen this sort of thing work out. Like, it kind of works on a comic book, but you see, the thing about a comic book is that comic book sales are actually rather small in scale. Like, if you can sell 10,000, like, I think the average is around, like, 10,000 an issue. Like, if you can sell 10,000 of an issue, it's, you know, you had a good, you had a good, that's a good month for a comic book. That's a much lower threshold. You just have to really convince everyone who's really into Venom to buy the Venom comic book. That's not all that hard. The problem is, can you convince a movie-going audience to care about a villain where the superhero won't really make an appearance? Like, can you make people care about Venom? Can you make enough people care about Venom on his own to justify making a Hollywood blockbuster financially viable?
Can it be done? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Will it be done? We'll see. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I think, you know, they're doing a stupid thing safely. If you're going to take a villain out of that, you know, universe and give him his own movie, Venom is the guy to do it with. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're doing something that's risky and kind of arguably stupid, but they're at least doing it intelligently. Mm-hmm. They're taking, you know, the most well-known villain, the one most people would want to see, and they're building it around that. And, you know, again, I say why not? I mean, at least it's not another fucking Spider-Man movie.
Mm-hmm. Now, they have said, I believe, I don't know if he's directing it or – he's not a director. He's not a director. I don't know if he's writing or producing it. Maybe both. Alex Kurtzman, one of the two people behind the first Transformers live-action movie and the rebooted Star Trek series, he's involved in this, and he says that Venom's going to be a darker Spider-Man movie.
Mm.
And I don't know, like, okay, you can actually see very blatantly a lot of the movies that were based off of The Dark Knight. Like, if you take, like, the main plot elements of The Dark Knight, which was a huge success. I know that you think it's just okay, Jack, but you can't deny how popular and, you know, just successful that movie was.
Well, no, I mean, I can read numbers. I just disagree with them.
My point is, though, that if you look at the movies that came out after The Dark Knight, everything, you saw movie after movie that was obviously based off of it. The director of Skyfall, the latest James Bond movie, went on record saying, I wanted to make The Dark Knight as a James Bond movie. And so Skyfall happened.
Yeah.
Star Trek Into Darkness said that it was going to be more Dark Knight-esque. And even The Avengers, which came out after The Dark Knight, you know, Avengers came out with The Dark Knight Rises, but Avengers was post-Dark Knight. And Avengers and the Nolan Batman films had very different tones. The Avengers was sort of kind of embracing the colorfulness and the heroicness of superheroes, whereas, you know, The Dark Knight was more cerebral, more kind of brooding, more dark. But even then, you saw hints of The Dark Knight. Like, okay, what's Loki, you know, Loki plans to get captured, right, in the Avengers?
Yeah.
Well, that was the Joker's plan, The Dark Knight.
Well, yeah.
Just like it was Khan's plan in Star Trek Into Darkness. Just like, I forgot the guy's name, Sylvia, I think, in Skyfall. His plan.
And yeah, all three of these movies I enjoyed a lot more than The Dark Knight.
But you get my point, right? The mm-hmm. Dark Knight happens.
I mean, I get the point. I don't argue that point. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they've copied it. Okay, and?
No, I don't know. My point is that it's not enough to just copy something. And some of these movies more successful than others. You know, Avengers, very highly regarded. Skyfall, very highly regarded. Star Trek Into Darkness, mixed reviews.
Now, I thought that was awesome, but that was just me.
I know. But my point being is that, you know, you take one of the reasons that the Dark Knight worked was because Batman. When you get down to who Batman is, he needs to be dark and gritty. That's just the way it is. And I just – it kind of seems like this might be the case. I'm not going to say it is, but it might be a case of people just seeing what worked and kind of trying to play copycat without actually realizing what made it work.
It could very well be. You know, and if that's the case, it's not the first time, and it certainly most likely will not be the last.
I don't know. I'm getting to the point, though, of, like, this whole dark and gritty thing where, like, it was actually kind of Batman and James Bond that kind of did this because Casino Royale and Batman Begins kind of came out within a year of each other, where both franchises – now, both movies took franchises whose last movies had been kind of overdone and silly, you know, with Die Another Day with James Bond's case and Batman and Robin in Batman's case. And both Batman Begins and Casino Royale attempted to, you know, strip down all the silly elements, get to the core of the characters, and just make a good and kind of make a gritty, dark action movie. And it works because James Bond and Batman, by their natures, are gritty and dark. But then it just seems like since then, people have been trying to replicate that formula, some more successful than others. But, you know, just because something works well for some characters doesn't mean it works well for all characters. And I'm not sure if introducing kind of a gritty, dark tone into Spider-Man is really something that needs to be done. Because Spider-Man, like you said, is at the end of the day, he's wisecracking. He's a teenager, so, like, his stories are inherently going to be less dark than, you know, the guy who fights a psychopathic clown. It just seems like people are just kind of It seems like they're throwing stuff against the walls and seeing what's going to work. Like, oh, it's going to be dark like that Batman movie everyone likes. It's like, oh, God damn it.
It could be. I mean, again, I see, like I said before, I see enough merit in it to where, you know, it's worth a shot. I mean, it's to me, it makes more sense than fucking Guardians of the Galaxy did, which was blatantly, to me, just throwing shit against a wall.
Guardians of the Galaxy was our movies are making a lot of money. What else can we make a lot of money? And then they kind of just delved into like the D list of comic book titles they had, and like, well, we got this thing. And that's what Guardians of the Galaxy did. And, you know, to their credit, they made it work. They made it viable, but I still maintain, I'm still in shock that anyone, you know, thought to greenlight a Guardians of the Galaxy movie. You know, like people say, oh, it made so much money. You know, it did. And it was a good movie, but I'm still kind of shocked that it happened. Because it's Guardians of the fucking Galaxy. But moving onward from Venom. But kind of sticking with the superhero theme, there is a Nightwing Kickstarter, a Nightwing series. It's fan-made. It's a fan-made series. It got started on Kickstarter. They were asking,
which is really remarkable.
Yeah, it
that Nightwing has fans.
Well, you know, Nightwing is another one of those cases where it's like, why should I care about this character? Honestly, because, you know, Nightwing is just Robin. It's like, well, it's now Dick Grayson without the guy that you were really there to see the whole time.
Yeah, exactly.
And you know, I know Dick Grayson has his fans. I know Nightwing has his fans. I don't care. I like Batman. I always came to watch Batman. Dick Grayson was, at most, just, you know, helping out. You know, I never came to just see Dick Grayson. So, you know, Dick Grayson as Nightwing does, like, yeah, I guess he's got his fans, but whatever. It's just, it's Nightwing. But he's got a, you know, they started this Kickstarter. They're asking for, I think, $20,000, up to $34,000 plus right now. So, and they've released a trailer.
But Potato Salad got $43,000.
Yeah, Potato Salad still got $43,000. And you know what? That's got to be the easiest fucking thing. That's got to be the easiest fucking thing. You spend, what, maybe $5 on the ingredients to make your potato salad, and then you're done?
Well, at least in this sense, though, I mean, justice is done, and Nightwing is being put in his proper place below that of Potato Salad.
But, you know, it's interesting. What did you think? You saw the trailer for it that they released. What did you think?
It's actually, you know, I'll be honest with you, it actually doesn't look bad. It kind of, not to go too far off topic, but it reminded me of a short film I watched recently that was also funded by Kickstarter. And it's a Star Trek short film.
Mm-hmm.
And I told you about this the other day. We haven't discussed it on the show yet.
Mm-hmm.
But it's actually got the guy that plays Tom Zarek from Battlestar Galactica and all this other shit.
By the way, he also played Apollo in the original Battlestar Galactica series.
Oh, okay. All right. I haven't watched the original, but
I have. If you're, it's not a thing where if you liked the new series, you're gonna like the old series because the old series is kind of bad.
Yeah, I kind of figured as much, and that's why I haven't watched it. But you know, so I
and
watched this
Richard
movie.
Hatch is the actor, by the way.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, his name was escaping my mind. But so I watched this movie, and it was called shit. I forget what the name of it was. Something Akan, Akara.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, it's a Star Trek short film, not affiliated with Paramount in any way, completely independent. And it was done really well. It's only like 20 minutes long, but it's really good. Prelude to Axnar. That's what it was. Yes. Which, you know, if you're a Star Trek fan and want to see this, check it out. It's definitely well worth your 20 minutes. The CGI was great. The acting was competent at the very least. And it was really good. So, and this kind of had that same feeling, you know, people that, and this 20-minute short film was made with a budget, I think they said of $15,000, something like that, and it was meant to show what they could do with a small sum of money in the hopes of getting more funding to do a feature film based on that battle. And good luck to them. I hope they get it. Mm-hmm. But now with this one, it kind of had that same feeling. It looked like it had better quality. The costumes in this fucking fan-made Kickstarter request are better than the goddamn Arrow costumes from fucking CW. Maybe Liam Neeson should give these guys a fucking call if he hasn't already. God damn it, Liam. How did you get my number? But
indeed.
You know, aside from the fact that it's Nightwing, and who gives a rat's ass about Nightwing, and he's running around with fucking emo hair and all this other shit, and, you know, Nightwing to me is just a poor – basically, his name should just be not Batman.
Yeah.
That should be his actual name, not Batman.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Dark, brooding – It's trying to give Dick Grayson legs his own character. And then they went ahead and just made Dick Grayson Batman the DC Comics for a while when they had Bruce Wayne incapacitated. Which, you know, I thought was the best thing. Like, just make him Batman. But
right, exactly. That makes more sense to me.
But the whole thing here, okay, that really highlighted the non-Batman part of it.
The non-Batmaniness.
Yeah, was, okay, the villain. They've got Deathstroke, who, you know, has gotten some play on Arrow as, you know, one of the villains. He's a C-level DC villain who is good for these sort of things. But his portrayal here, I watched this trailer, and my biggest issue was that it seemed to rip off the last two Nolan movies.
It did seem kind of Joker-y.
It seemed Joker-y because you know that scene in The Dark Knight where the Joker crashes Bruce Wayne's party?
Yeah, and then it shows him, you know, wandering around in a fucking party and...
Yeah, yeah.
My God, rich people, I'ma make your day really unpleasant.
Yeah, and then, like, Deathstroke's doing that in this trailer. He's in this fundraiser, he kicks down the door, he's like, I'm here to cause shit. And his voice seemed kind of Bane-like. I don't know why.
I didn't get the Bane vibe out of it.
I got a mixture of Bane and Joker from it. Like his entrance in this trailer seemed really Joker-esque, but the fact that he is an international terrorist and the fact that he's got and his voice kind of gave me a slight Bane vibe. And then they had who I presume to be Barbara Gordon. Because Barbara Gordon and Dick Grayson are a thing. So, like, I saw this redheaded chick. I'm just going to assume she's Barbara Gordon. But she's talking to Dick Grayson, and she's like, you can't beat, you know, Deathstroke. You're not ready for him. And I immediately thought to that scene, The Dark Knight Rises, where Alfred is telling Bruce Wayne, like, look at Bane. You can't beat him. So...
You can't do it, Rock. If you step in that ring, he'll kill you, Rock. He'll kill you.
Exactly, though, you know. But you get what I'm saying is that it seems like I've seen this before in a Batman movie, and Dick Grayson's already trying to overcome the not-Batman thing, and you're just going to have him fight a villain who right now is reminding me a lot of the Joker and Bane. So, you know... I don't know. I understand that Deathstroke isn't the main point here. The point is to just have someone for Dick Grayson to oppose so you can justify this thing and then maybe, you know, inspire further funding for more episodes or maybe a full-length series or maybe just to get it out there to maybe try to get it picked up by a network. I get that the goal is to just have a villain for Dick Grayson to punch at the end of the day, but damn, I was getting strong Bane and Joker vibes from the way that they were handling Deathstroke in that trailer.
Well, I'm more inclined to forgive something like this,
mm-hmm.
It being a very independent and kind of fan-made and funded production, I'm more inclined to forgive something like this, even though I think Nightwing as a character is just absolute rubbish. But that aside, it at least looks like it has good production value and all that other shit. Now, will I watch it? Probably not. Or if I do, I'll be so distracted by how much I hate Nightwing and his fucking emo chode hair that I'll definitely be rooting for Deathstroke for sure. Kill him!
Oh, Deathstroke's got this big problem where he's got this, like, hockey mask that's, like, half black and half orange for reasons.
Well, you know, you gotta stand out.
I guess. I don't know. It kind of just seems, who the fuck dressed you, man? Come on. But, all the power to them, I guess, although I don't see this going anywhere on an official level. I don't see, Warner Brothers picking this up in any official capacity because, well, they seem to have their plans for how they want to handle Batman in this new unified kind of cinematic DC universe that they've got going. And between Batman versus Superman and the new Gotham show, I think they're really trying to map out sort of the Batman's story in this new universe, and Dick Grayson might be a thing that they have their own plans for down the road, and so this is just going to be, I don't think this is ever really going to be more than it is, I guess.
Well, at the very least, the guys that make the costume should get a call from the CW.
Yes.
Because a lot better quality than the fucking CW's Arrow shit.
Indeed. I don't know. Arrow's a CW show. You're right. The whole thing just kind of has this air of cheapness to it. But also, interestingly, in the trailer, if you pause it at a minute and 24 seconds, you actually get a shot of the Joker in this thing.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It's too soon. There can never be another Joker.
Oh, calm down. Calm down. Your irrational Heath Ledger hatred.
Have I ever said that I hated Heath Ledger?
I know. I'm just giving you a hard time, man. But, that's that. So that's, let's move on. I think we've got some out of the realm of comic book heroes and into the realm of stupid names and misspelled words.
It's trendy. It's keeping with the times. It's edgy. It's rebranding the brand to better reflect their position as innovators and chicken.
Yeah. So I think we talked a bit a few months back about how Matt Smith, known as the 11th Doctor in Doctor Who, was going to play a role, a yet unannounced role, in a Terminator reboot. Now, we still don't know what Matt Smith's doing in this movie, but we do,
maybe he doesn't either at this point.
But we do know that the movie has a new name. And it's Terminator Genesis, which you might think, that's a good name. If it's a reboot, if it's starting back from the beginning, you're going to want, Genesis implies beginning, the beginnings of it. Except that they're misspelling Genesis here. It is spelled G-E-N-I-S-Y-S.
Genital systems.
Apparently, this came from Arnold Schwarzenegger himself, which makes sense as his English has never been all that great.
Now, the idea came from Arnie, or the news came from Arnie?
The idea, apparently.
Oh, wow.
I don't know. I just remembered of the thing that came to mind was sci-fi when they rebranded.
Siffy.
They became Siffy.
Siffy.
And so now it's just like Genesis with a Y. I don't know.
It's one of those things where you just kind of look at it and you're like, why?
Yeah, I don't know. This just seems stupid. Like, okay, look, a Terminator movie is going to have image problems right off the bat because Terminator 3, not well received, and Terminator Salvation, not well received, with Christian Bale doing his Batman voice for a whole movie.
Though I liked that movie. I liked Salvation. I thought it was really good, actually.
Of course you did.
What was wrong with it?
I don't – actually, no. I tend to agree with you in that I'm not going to defend it, but I think it's much better than a lot of people make it out to be.
I mean, it's a hell of a lot better than Terminator 3. I don't know what the fuck was going on with that god-awful piece of shit.
But my point being, though, that Salvation did not really perform well. So, you know, the Terminator franchise kind of, you know, reeling. They're trying to reboot it, get things back to basics. I just don't know how a name like Genesis, like misspelling Genesis in the title is going to work, because you're going to flash that on screen for that first trailer and people are just going to laugh.
Maybe you're giving people too much credit for intelligence.
No,
I
think people are going to laugh. And that is not what you want, okay? I saw the M. Night Shyamalan movie Devil. When that movie's trailer first premiered and the words from director M. Night Shyamalan came on screen, people laughed. And that movie bombed. So, you know, laughter, you know, and that, if it's not a comedy, you don't want laughter, you know, when people see your trailer. Yeah, it's no surprise that when they did the trailers for After Earth, no one mentioned Shyamalan's name in that trailer. Like, they laughed, man. They laughed. So, you know,
I don't know. You saying that the idea comes from Schwarzenegger, that actually makes it gives a little bit more of a place to it in my mind, because I mean, he's just now within the last, you know, few years become quote unquote relevant as an actor again.
Mm-hmm.
After, you know, being out of circulation since the 90s. And this whole respelling of the font that they use for it seems very 90s to me.
Yeah, like this seems like he think he's still stuck in a time warp where it's like 1996.
Yeah. I think so. I think that's where his mind is coming from with it.
It's like Genesis. This seems like something that they would have slapped on the front of like a really bad, like a 90s comic book that everyone loved, but then everyone kind of looked back at it later and was like, oh man, that was stupid.
Like, I could see that name and spelling flying, you know, in the late 90s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where internets are the thing now and it's new and oh my god, you can get porn if you just wait 5 minutes for a JPEG to download. And
early and mid 90s movies dealing with the internet are hilarious, by the way.
Yeah, no, they really are. They really are.
They're hacking the networks.
Oh no. Yeah, it's funny. I mean, no one knew how the internet worked back then. It was new and mysterious, and you could pass shit off like that as being accurate, mm-hmm. quote unquote. And people, you know, okay, I don't know any different, so why not? Now I think people are a little bit more informed for the most part. I say that hopefully.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I could very much see this being a thing from like the 90s and it being okay and no one really batting an eye at it. Now I think it seems a little bit more odd to you than to me, and maybe that is the age gap between us coming through a little bit.
Mm.
I see it as kind of like one of those things where I don't think people are going to laugh at it. I see it as one of those things where people, me personally, I'd say, why? Mm. You know, why not just Genesis? You know, I think that would have just spelled correctly, unless maybe there's a lawsuit from Sega or God.
God's, you know, got that shit trademarked, yo.
of which, actually, legally speaking, Sega is a lot more aggressive than God. But, you know, so I could sooner see a problem with Sega. But, you know, I don't see the need for it. It's kind of like one of those things of, are you just trying to be cute here or what? Well, you know, it's
mm-hmm.
maybe there was some kind of copyright reason for it. I don't know. I don't know. Maybe they couldn't copyright the word Genesis. Again, Sega and God. And they did this. I don't fucking know. It is silly. It is kind of frivolous. I don't think it's going to hurt the performance of the movie any.
Mm.
I think, you know, if it's good, people, it'll still do well. It's not going to kill the movie. It might have a few people being like, why do they do that? Kind of a thing. I don't think it's going to be any kind of long-term detriment, though.
Mm-hmm. Like, I don't
stupid,
know.
Stupid at the least. I don't think it's going anything more than, you know, harmless idiocy.
I just don't think even that is something that this franchise can avoid. They kind of have to put their best foot forward, and this seems like not doing that.
That foot was lopped off a long time ago. That best foot.
Well, let's move on to something that. I don't know. I have to admit, I'm a bit interested in seeing. There is a new Dracula movie.
Yeah.
It's called Dracula Untold. And if you want a basic summary of the plot, if you've ever seen Bram Stoker's Dracula from the 90s of Gary Oldman, it is that first scene stretched out to feature length.
Yeah. And minus the fucking boob hair. So, I'm down.
I don't think there was boob hair in the opening to that movie.
Well, no, that's what I said, minus the boob hair. This movie will be minus boob hair. Mm-hmm. And for the people who are like, boob hair, what the fuck is he on about? I don't mean hair on boobs, but no, God, that's gross. No, there's a scene where Dracula has, like, his hair done, but it looks like a pair of fucking titties on his head.
Yeah.
And for me, that just ruined that goddamn movie. From that second, I condemned that movie as garbage.
It's actually
and
have really
not
good.
Even attempted it. I'm not watching a movie where a guy's got his hair done to look like a pair of fucking tits.
He doesn't wear it for very long.
That's not a mitigating factor, sir. The fact is that it was done. Someone thought that was a good idea. That was, yes, this is a thing we're going to do. Let's make his hair look like a giant pair of fucking tits on his head.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem. But yeah, now this movie actually, now I can see a lot of people who are really heavy into the vampire thing, really heavy into the Dracula thing. I'm sure they will find something to complain about. And I look forward to hearing their rantings.
I honestly don't think they have much to complain about because let's face it, after Twilight, we need as many real vampire movies as we can get. And for this movie, it looks like it might have its flaws, but at least this has taken vampires back to, you know, their roots.
True. That is a valid point, actually. I mean, if you're going to fuck around with Dracula, now is the time to do it, as long as he's not sparkling. And at this point, the fans are ready to accept anything where there's a real goddamn vampire again, instead of, you know...
I mean, we've got Luke Evans as Dracula.
I don't even know who the fuck that is.
Luke Evans is I'm trying to pull up his filmography to see what else he might have been in to maybe jog your memory. Let's see.
Here's the part where Mike rattles off a lot of movies I haven't seen.
Did you see the last Hobbit movie? Desolation of Smaug?
No.
Okay, that's his
See, I told you guys. I told you.
Well, Well, that was his last – that's, like, his biggest movie on here. And, yeah, if you didn't see that – did you see the movie The Immortals?
Yes, I believe
Zeus.
I did.
He played Zeus that?
That was kind of a, like a 300-ish
yeah.
kind of a thing. Yes, I did see it. I couldn't tell you anything about it. I recall – liking it somewhat.
He plays Zeus in it.
Okay, I mean...
He also plays Apollo in Clash of the Titans, so apparently he's just playing all the Greek gods.
Okay, now I have seen that one a few times.
He plays Apollo in that. And in the 2010 Robin Hood movie, he plays Sheriff's Thug number one.
Well, now, who cannot remember the timeless performance of Sheriff Number One.
Sheriff Slug Number One.
Sheriff Slug Number One.
Yeah, no, so...
See, he was that good. I thought he actually was a sheriff.
So, you know, that's, you know, not a huge filmography, but I have to say that not a really notable filmography, but from what I've seen him in, I liked him well enough. I think he could play Dracula decently. And, yeah, again, you know, vampires have been so fucked over that, you know, just doing a movie that gets the Dracula mythos right and makes him, like, this fearsome creature of the night again is going to be a welcome change. It's going to be one of those things where it might get – it might seem better than it actually is just because the state of vampire movies – you know, at our present time.
Yeah, so, I mean, the timing's good on this. It's got a very low bar to have to step over, which it pretty much already has just with the trailer alone. It's pretty much already surpassed that.
And when I say that it's that opening scene to the Gary Oldman Dracula movie stretched into 2 hours, I don't mean that as a bad thing, because I like the opening scene in that movie. I like the attempt to tie, you know, the historical Vlad the Impaler to Dracula, because, you know, the fact of the matter is that Bram Stoker didn't give a shit. Bram Stoker's original story, you know, his original draft for Dracula did not call the vampire Dracula. He called the Dracula Vampire.
I see what he did there.
Yeah, you do. But here's the thing. Here's the thing about that. Basically, he was like, okay, so he wanted to set him in Transylvania. And so he goes to Transylvania, and he hears the story about Vlad the Impaler, basically, you know, the historical Vlad Dracula being this bloodthirsty dick, and was like, oh, well, that sounds like a bloodthirsty guy. I guess I'll just call my vampire in Transylvania Dracula. So he does. But there was really no attempt to, like, reconcile the fact that this vampire, named after this historical character, there was no attempt to reconcile that story. So Bram Stoker's Dracula attempts to do that very well, in my opinion. And now this is just taking that story and really kind of going places with it. And I'm excited to see what they do. I'm actually really excited. I looked this up on Wikipedia. Apparently, the vampire that turns Dracula into a vampire is going to be the Roman Emperor Caligula.
Makes sense.
You know, apparently Caligula, they're going to say basically Caligula became a vampire and then he turned Dracula into a vampire. And you know what? I dig that. That's a new part of the mythos. That's not something that's been explained. But, you know, I like it. Like Jack said, it makes sense. Caligula was a sick motherfucker. So, I can believe it that he would get the vampire herpes at some point during one of his orgies.
Would that be like vampurpees? Verpes?
Probably.
Burpees.
And then, so, you know, Dracula, I'm looking forward to it, actually. It looks like they're going to try to make him more sympathetic, obviously, because, you know, it is a movie. They're going to try to make him into an anti-hero kind of thing. They're kind of portraying him as being up against the wall against the Turks. And here's the thing. Vlad the Impaler was up against the wall against the Turks. The difference is that Vlad the Impaler, the whole impaling thing, kind of rubs people the wrong way these days. So, Vlad the Impaler's kind of looked back as sort of a psychopath. I guess is going to try to sort of explain it away, saying, you know, oh, you know, he was a man without choice, and then, you know, in order to defeat them, he became a vampire. I don't really mind any of that. I like the attempts to tie the character in with the historical person. I think it'll be fun, and it'll hopefully help rehabilitate vampires some. Hopefully, get the Twilight stink off of the genre, and we can move on from there. Hopefully, to bigger and better things.
Agreed. Looks like it'll be at least passable, and again, it by comparison, it should be downright good.
Although I do know that you were not happy with the song they use in the trailer.
God damn it. Yeah, how many 80s songs do we have to fucking rake over the coals? Well, everyone wants to rule the world. I believe it was Tears for Fears who did that. And, you know, do we have to do this?
I'll tell you exactly why they're doing it. Because all the kids who see the movies these days who are...
Yeah, they don't know.
They don't know. Like, fuck, I barely remember a lot of those older songs from the 80s. I was born in 87, so by the time I grew up, a lot of these songs were old news. Kids today, they don't have any fucking idea. So you put the song like, oh, that's a good song, and then you tell them, oh, that's actually a cover of an 80s song. They're like, what's the 80s?
Yeah. Then you just hand them a pile of cocaine.
Like, that's the fucking 80s.
Yeah, son!
So... Dracula, raping 80s songs, but hopefully rehabilitating vampire fiction. I guess, you know, so we're going to swing back to the world of comic books. And the character known as the Vision has been added to Avengers Age of Ultron. Now, for those of you unaware, Vision... is a robot that Ultron creates. Ultron is a robot. He creates a robot. And it's kind of like this kind of cycle thing. Because, you know, the Avengers create Ultron. Ultron turns on the Avengers. Ultron creates Vision. Vision turns on Ultron. It's one of those deals. It's about the hubris of creation or some such.
Ooh, metaphors.
But the thing is, I'm curious... We've got the original six Avengers. We've got the Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver. Now we've got Vision. Is Age of Ultron perhaps entering Batman v Superman territory?
I think so. Which, based on Marvel Studios strategy, as it's been explained to us, I don't like it, but it makes sense for what they're trying to do, which is just saturate so many movies that they've always got something going, like you're talking about with the Star Wars movies, you know. Mm-hmm. They want to always have one of these movies out and in circulation.
Mm.
And, of course, that's going to be, I think, to the overall detriment of the franchises, to the detriment of us as well, because we're just going to get sick of them and stop watching eventually, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I think Marvel is riding a wave that is kind of coming into shore, and they don't quite realize it, personally.
Yeah. The whole thing just seems to be reaching an apex, you know, like, where between this, Batman v Superman... They're just packing so many things into these movies now that it's going to be hard to care about any one thing. I mean, I think the six main heroes we had in the Avengers was perfect. Everyone got just enough amount of screen time to really feel like they weren't shoehorned in. Now you're adding at least three more to the hero side of things now. It just seems like it's going to become untenable at a certain point, because then what are you going to do for Avengers 3? You going to take the nine heroes you had for Avengers 2 and then add more? I mean, assuming Ant-Man's movie makes money, he'll probably be – you can probably write him in for Avengers 3. So, you know, at what point does it stop, or at what point do they not stop but the movie then just becomes unwatchable? And – you know, we've seen this before. X-Men 3 is, like, the perfect example of this. Although I suspect once Batman v Superman comes out, that'll become the go-to of what happens when you just overload everything.
Probably. I think Avengers 2 is getting to that point, maybe even equal to it. I'm a little bit more biased towards liking the Avengers because I hate Superman so much. And I really don't, besides Batman, I really don't like any of the DC heroes. So there probably is a bit of bias there on my part.
I kind of like Green Lantern.
I did like the most recent movie of Green Lantern.
That's a bad movie, Public Defender, if I ever heard one.
But, you know, beyond that, I wouldn't call myself a Green Lantern fan,
I
really.
I wouldn't call myself a Green Lantern fan either. I just, like, I like him, I guess, is the best way I can say. Like, I don't read his comic book. I don't read his comic books, but I like him in the animated fiction, in the film, in the films, in the DC animated films that I've seen. I generally like, Green Lantern. I'd probably say he's my second favorite DC hero after Batman. I'm just saying, like, I know Avengers built up a lot of goodwill, but is this going to be a thing where after the initial hype of this movie wears off, people are like, there was a bit too much going on? Because, you've got to take a 2.5 – let's just assume it goes long and goes 2.5 hours. I don't see this thing – I don't see an Avengers movie going 3 hours. I don't see them doing that. But – so let's say this goes 2.5. Let's even stretch it to 2:45. That's still not a lot of time to dole out to the 6 heroes from Avengers that are all returning, plus the 3 new heroes. And the 3 new heroes haven't been in any DC animated Marvel cinematic films.
Right.
So unlike the Avengers, where everyone pretty much had their backstory established beforehand, now you've got to establish backstory for these characters in this movie and give them time to shine, alongside giving enough time for the original Avengers cast. And then you've got to work Ultron in somehow. You got to, develop him. Yeah. Getting a bit dicey. Just a bit dicey.
Yeah, they're getting to that place where I think with Avengers 2, in the same place that Batman versus Superman is going, they're trying to do too much.
Mm-hmm.
And the first Avengers already had, as you and I have discussed at length a couple of times, they already had 2 more people hero-wise in there than they really needed, looking at you, Black Widow, and Hawkeye. So I'm sure they're going to be in the second one, which I do welcome Scarlett Johansson's tits and ass. I do welcome that. Hawkeye's just kind of whatever.
Nobody cares, Hawkeye.
Right, but at least we're used to seeing them, and they can kind of do their thing, whatever that is.
Mm-hmm.
But with this, they're adding Vision, and you got Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver, and I'm just kind of progressively finding my give-a-fucks to be dwindling, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Honestly, I don't know why Vision's in this. You could probably cut Vision out entirely. And, again, I don't know what story they're trying to tell here, but I don't think Vision's necessary for this plot. I don't think you need Vision to have... Just because you have Ultron doesn't mean you need Vision. The interesting thing is that Vision's played by Paul Bentley, who is the voice of Jarvis, Tony Stark's robotic butler. So the idea is that maybe Vision is a body for Jarvis in the cinematic universe.
Which that would be,
which would be interesting.
Acceptable, yeah.
And it would be acceptable in a way because it would be like, look, we already know Jarvis, so you really wouldn't have to establish too much there. But it still feels like it's potentially weighing it down. Like, okay, guys, Avengers, by its very nature, is an ensemble cast. Those are tricky to do right. Let's not add more people than you can handle here. Yes, Avengers made a lot of money, and Marvel's flying high right now. Let's not fly too close to the sun. If you get my drift.
Yeah. And I think that's exactly what they are, though. That's what they are doing. They're getting a little bit big for their britches, and I get where they feel like they should have the right to. They have had some very successful, you know, films and such.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're doing a little bit, they're going a little bit far with it.
Yeah. I think they are too. I think they are too, and I think they just need to just slow the brakes down, know they've got a good thing going, and not, you know, push it to an early end. Not push it to an early end or anything like that. So, I guess we're going to, you know, wrap things up by talking about the WWE Network. Now, we've covered this in the past. We've kind of covered its ups and downs. Well, mostly downs.
Oh, the downs.
And the WWE, you know, I'm kind of curious. I'm interested to know what the current thing is. Because before I get into the meat of this story, I want to say that anyone who signed up for the WWE Network back when it launched, SummerSlam was the last pay-per-view that they got on the network. After that, the network ran out. Their subscription basically is going to ran out after a few weeks after SummerSlam. The first pay-per-view for the next billing cycle is Night of Champions. Right. We've talked a bit about, you know, the potential pitfalls in the Cena-Lesnar rematch. I'm not going to talk about that. Instead, I want to talk about something that happened on Raw last night. So, Roman Reigns is being built up as the next big star. And obviously, you know, given his story of the breakup of the Shield, he would eventually have to go through Seth Rollins, who was the one who turned on Dean Ambrose and Roman Reigns and broke up the Shield.
Yeah.
Well, they had that match scheduled for Night of Champions. Roman Reigns versus Dean Ambrose was going to happen at Night of Champions. And that's a smart move, because that's a match people want to see. It's a match that people are excited about. It's a match between Roman Reigns, who's coming into his own as a single star, and Seth Rollins, who is vastly underrated in the ring, if you ask me. And, you know, it looks to be like a good match. And it's a smart move to put it on, because if you're trying to sell people on a new network, on a new six-month subscription to the network, then Night of Champions has got to be a big deal. Night of Champions has got to be a show people go, oh, man, I got to see that. I got to pay $9.99 to see that.
Right.
To see that. Well, Raw happened last night, and it was odd. Because about midway through Raw, they announce a match. Later tonight on Raw, Roman Reigns is going to face Dean Ambrose.
What?
The fuck? This is supposed to be at the pay-per-view. Okay. So then, you know, match comes out. They both come out, and you're thinking, and I'm thinking, maybe there's going to be some sort of shenanigans.
Yeah.
Because Seth Rollins is aligned with the Authority, that being Triple H's faction. So one of Triple H's lackeys, Kane, you know, has been a thorn in Roman Reigns' side for a month now or so. So I'm thinking, oh, well, maybe Roman Reigns is going to show up. I mean, maybe Kane is going to show up, maybe cost Roman Reigns the match, or maybe this will go to, like, a double DQ, and then they're like, oh, it's Night of Champions, got to see the rematch. I figure there's going to be some shenanigans afoot. Well, the match starts, and it goes on. It's a good match. It's a good match, actually. But it goes on. And then Seth Rollins goes for his finisher, the curb stomp. And Roman Reigns, you know, he counters it. He ducks away from it. Seth Rollins turns around, and then Roman Reigns spears him and pins him and beats Seth Rollins clean. Well, okay then. And then 10 minutes later, Michael Cole, the lead announcer for the WWE, says, and they're going to fight again at Night of Champions. Pay $9.99 to see it. You son of a bitch, I just saw Roman Reigns beat Seth Rollins clean in a match on free TV. The fuck? Why not just have Brock Lesnar defend the WWE title against John Cena? Why not just have the whole show on the Raw before the show?
Oh my gosh.
So if I'm like, oh man, I want to see that Roman Reigns Seth Rollins match, I better buy that commit to that 6 month subscription to the network so I can see it for $9.99. Well, I don't even have to spend $10 on it now. I've got it for free. I got it for free on live TV. Didn't have to pay a dime for it. And fuck, Raw's on basic cable. I don't even need the fancy cable package.
Unlike I do for hockey.
Yeah, fuck you, NBC Sports Network. But like, what the hell? Like, did Vince just... Is Vince devolving?
Yes.
Does Vince have dementia now? Like, was Vince going backstage there at Raw being like, put that highly touted pay-per-view match on for free TV? I know we got to sell network subscriptions, but let's just give it away for free so they don't have to buy the network. I mean, it's weird. I shouldn't be complaining that they gave us a pay-per-view caliber match on free TV, but... The fuck are you doing, Vince?
But from a marketing standpoint, it is kind of stupid unless it's meant to be a thing of, well, if you liked this, you get to see more of it pay-per-view.
But you see, the thing is, though, is that that Wrestling Booking 101 says that you throw them out there and you have a match on Raw, and then somebody like Kane or Triple H comes out to screw Roman Reigns. Out of, like, a victory. Like, you have it so that Roman Reigns is clearly about to win, but he gets screwed out of the victory. And then you book the rematch or pay-per-view. So then people want to see... So then people are like, oh, Roman Reigns got screwed on Raw. See the pay-per-view where he's finally going to get his chance to get revenge. That's what you do. You don't have Roman Reigns go over clean on free TV and then try to sell the same exact match on pay-per-view. Why should I watch it? There's no point. Roman Reigns won the feud. There's
right.
No point for having this match. It's over. They had a match. Roman Reigns won. Okay, that's it. God damn it. Like, again, you got, again, free pay-per-view quality match, but the fuck are you thinking? People give Eric Bischoff a lot of crap, okay? But for fuck's sake, at least he understood how to promote wrestling on a week-to-week basis in the monthly pay-per-view era where, you know, you've seen some of the interviews he's done since the demise of WCW, and he basically says, I was using nitros to build up pay-per-view matches. Oh, yeah, that's what you're supposed to do. You know, granted, WCW, when they started getting desperate for ratings near the end, started putting on pay-per-view quality matches on free on Nitro. But that was recognized as a bad thing that shouldn't be emulated.
Yeah.
But moving on to the main point of why I'm bringing up the network. There's a rumor. Unconfirmed at this point, but it hasn't been dismissed either, that the WWE is in negotiations to sell a good portion of their library, their tape library of all of the wrestling footage they own from the early WWF days, from WCW, ECW, WCCW, AWA. All that stuff. The old Memphis territories, all that stuff that the WWE owns, that is basically the basis of their network. I mean, that's the real draw if you're a wrestling fan, is you get all of this archive footage for only $10 a month. But apparently they're in negotiations to sell a good chunk of that footage to Warner Brothers.
Which is owned by Ted Turner.
Yeah.
Hello, Vince.
So, I don't know what the hell is going on. Like, apparently the report said that the WWE, due to slow network sales, which tells me that perhaps those people, not enough of those people are renewing their subscription and perhaps they're getting panicky. You know, something's going on. And, I mean, Warner Brothers, like, really? Like, as far as I know, Ted Turner has made no plans to restart any sort of pro wrestling competition since the demise of WCW. He had something like a 5-year no-compete clause that was included in the sale of WCW that Turner wouldn't try to compete with Vince in pro wrestling. It was in like 5 years, but that ran out. That would have run out in 2006. And so it's been 8 years. You think that if he would have had any interest in it, he would have done something about it by now.
Right. So, I mean, do you think this is their backup plan then for, okay, this network is going tits up, maybe a plan to discontinue it and then maybe they're going to hawk the whole goddamn network over to Warner.
Maybe they're going to try to reinvent it, maybe some sort of media partnership with Warner. Maybe they're going, or maybe it's a simple case of WCW archive footage. Time Warner owns WCW.
The thing is, okay.
Maybe they're trying to do some sort of cross-promotional thing where it's like WWE and Warner Brothers are coming together to bring you some WCW archival special. Like, I don't know.
Well, okay. Here's my question. Them doing this, mm-hmm. you know, potentially selling this huge chunk of their archived footage over to Warner – depending on what Warner chooses to do with it, I mean, doesn't that further remove reason for anyone who would want to buy into this goddamn network? I mean, if Warner's making it available through other means, then that, I mean, a huge draw of this network is that archived footage for a lot of people. And so, I mean, doesn't this further shoot that in the fucking foot?
It does. Like, I don't know what to make of this, honestly. In the wide-eyed kind of naivety when I first heard about this, I'm like, maybe they'll sell the assets for WCW back to Time Warner. But I realized that would be a stupid thing to do, on their part
well,
at least.
That's not going to stop them, evidently.
So
I mean, that alone's not going to stop them.
So, like, I don't know. And how can you even do that? I mean, the WCW world title has now been fully unified with the WWE world title. Like, I don't – how would that work?
I think we need to make this a new segment mm-hmm. on the show entitled What the Fuck is Vince Doing Now?
Because this whole thing, like – I don't know what the end game is. I
don't think they do either.
Like, I don't know what would Warner want with it. Like I said, Time Warner has been out of the wrestling business for 13 years now. They've been free to dabble in the wrestling business for 8 years now. And they haven't. So, what do they want with it? Is this a case where WWE approached them, and if Warner is interested in it, what are they going to do with it if they get it?
Home video releases? I
guess maybe that's it, because I know, you know, obviously, being part of the same corporate empire, Warner Brothers handled the home video releases of WCW's pay-per-views back in the day. Maybe this is some kind of thing to get so that Warner Brothers can, you know, release some of those old pay-per-views on DVD again? Maybe.
But then again, doesn't that just further shoot? I mean, okay, is WWE, is Vince making a trade-off of, you know, long-term royalties from distributing the rights that he currently owns, you know, based on that? Is he making the trade-off and just cashing out in one lump sum? Is the company in that big of a trouble?
I mean, I can't say that it's not.
I mean, it basically, has it started cannibalizing itself?
Well, I mean, that's always been the fear, because WWE still runs their own still runs their own home video network. Like, WWE Home Video still produces content on DVD that, you know, you figure that the DVD, the WWE TV market and DVD market and the WWE network are two aspects of the same business that would cannibalize each other. I don't know. I mean, when you say, is the company in this bad shape, it's hard to argue that it's not. Even if they hit a million by the end of the year, they're still losing 40 to 50 million in terms of revenue loss. I don't see how you can lose at least – I don't see how – when your best case scenario is we lose $40 million on the year, I don't see how that translates into healthy financial situation.
Well, maybe it does to Vince. You don't know him. You don't tell him how to run his business.
Not for
you
lack
know
of trying.
Him, son.
Yeah, I know, right?
Not for lack of trying. But he, but I mean, that's just what's going on here. I don't know. Like, is the network just this much of a drain that, because it wasn't too long ago, it was only like 2 months back in July where they had their second quarterly report and they outlined all of the, all of these plans to make the network viable. Like they, like, or we're gonna cut the budget down in 2015, we're gonna do this, that, and the other thing to, and they've got on this huge $9.99 marketing blitz to, you know, hammer home, you know, the great deal that it is.
Unless you live in Canada and
yeah,
Rogers.
Which is weird because
– you don't, you're totally fucked.
Yeah, the only way I can get the WWE Network is through Rogers, and that's $11.99. But I see all of the all of the commercials on WWE. It's like $9.99. Like, fuck you. I don't get it for $9.99. But, I mean, they're going on this huge marketing blitz, but they're apparently talking to Warner about it. They're losing 50 million, they're probably going to lose between 40 and 90 million a year, depending on how those subscribers at the end of the year shake up. Like, and on top of that, the whole thing's a mess. I mean, they want us to pay $9.99. I mean, they want us to pay money to see a pay-per-view now that had one of its marquee matchups shown on free TV with a clean finish.
Yes, I mean,
in the fuck?
Yeah, you'll still buy the network, right?
I don't know. Like, why?
Because $9.99.
I mean, there's got to be like, it must be a goddamn madhouse. Like going on at WWE Network, they must have no idea what the hell they're doing anymore. Like apparently there's a power struggle going on behind scenes. Triple H, who has been criticized, you know, for his career as an in-ring wrestler, but has apparently kind of earned the love of some of the more hardcore fans because Triple H is, if nothing else, very appreciative of the history of wrestling. He's kind of gone on to kind of he's emphasized sort of the WWE's role as sort of like the caretaker of wrestling's history because it has the rights to so many promotions from the past.
For now,
yes. But like Triple H, you know, he's the one who kind of shot new life into WWE's developmental system, which is getting rave reviews, NXT Wrestling. But there seems to be a power struggle between Triple H and Vince McMahon. Like, apparently, Vince McMahon wants to do certain things some way, you know, certain things certain ways. Triple H wants to do them different ways. And Vince McMahon and Triple H are sort of now butting heads behind scenes from what I hear. It sounds like nobody really knows what the hell's going on in WWE anymore.
And that, sir, is the most interesting match of all.
Oh, man, I'm waiting for, like, the stars to align. It's kind of like the trailer to Iron Man 2, where they're like, Tony Stark, when the blood is in the water, the sharks will come. And now I just kind of want this perfect alignment of, like, Eric Bischoff and Warner Brothers to sort of, like, collide. And then Ted Turner is like, it's time to take it back.
That would be interesting.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's like, that would be hilarious. Like, that would be hilarious. Like, if WWE's financial situation gets so strained that Ted Turner's like, I'll give you, like, $1 billion, because what the fuck is that to him?
Yeah.
He'll be like, I'll give you, like, $1 billion for all the rights to WCW.
In this jar, Vince, is a billion-dollar bill, the only one in existence. All I see is sand and barbed wire. It's at the bottom. Go for it, Vince. Why?
And he goes for it.
Oh, it hurts so much. I know. Yeah. So that's the WWE, kind of a clusterfuck of who knows what. I expect 2015 to be a very interesting year for this company. I expect very interesting things. But with that, we're going to bring episode 32 to a close, basically a geek show. You can catch us on Twitter, of course, at A Geek Show. Email us at basicallyageekshow@gmail.com. We're on Spreaker, Stitcher, iTunes, YouTube. You can catch us
at outside your bathroom window.
Outside your bathroom window at sportslogos.net, at forums.taishitu.org, at tfw2005.com. We're there at all those locations. We tried to get on MMO Champions, but you bastards wouldn't let us advertise. So this has been episode 32 of Basically a Geek Show. For Jack, this is Mike, signing off.
Good night, ladies and gentlemen.